I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, Gina.
Hi, Ione. Hi, everyone. I'm Gina, the senior editor of Polyester.
And I'm Ione, the founding editor-in-chief of Polyester. And this is the Polyester Podcast, a feminist pop culture podcast dissecting the discourse on a weekly basis.
Before we start, if you're a fan of this podcast, please make sure to like, rate and subscribe. And if you really love us, you can sign up for a podcast membership where you can join our WhatsApp and get on our Instagram close friends for only £3 a month. Do we have any reviews, Ione?
We do. We do have some reviews. You're looking me right in the eye right now.
I'd like to hear the review.
5 stars, insightful and witty. I love the topics, how well they're researched, and I particularly love when Ione and Gina pretend bicker. It's always funny and very obviously said in jest.
Oh, that's kind.
I'm ridiculously old to be listening, not even a millennial, but I like the fresh perspectives. It keeps me from falling into a middle-aged lady rut. Thank you. That is by McWadstock via Apple Podcasts in Ireland.
That's lovely.
That is lovely. Thank you very much. So, Gina.
Go on.
What are we doing today?
Today we're doing the name on everybody's lips.
Baby reindeer.
Baby reindeer.
Baby reindeer.
Say it 3 times and he'll appear behind him.
The man?
Like Beetlejuice. Oof.
It's a bit much. It's a very serious topic. Would you like to give
yeah,
us
the... Yeah, you've got to give a bit of levity.
Our trigger before... warnings.
Yeah, so we're going to go into the plot like very specifically and granularly. So if you're going to go watch it now. Before you do that, though, I would recommend looking up the trigger warnings. But just briefly, it's obviously like stalking, abuse, sexual abuse, trauma, transphobia, homophobia, quite a litany of things. I've probably missed one off. Please go and Google it.
We're going to go into fatphobia.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about these topics within the podcast episode as well, so just so you're aware.
So for anyone that hasn't heard of what baby reindeer is, would you like to tell us, G? Because I haven't watched it, that is my disclaimer, but the reasons will become clear as to why I haven't watched it.
Yeah, so Baby Reindeer, I'm not sure, it was like maybe two weeks ago.
It was only a week ago, I think.
Well, I watched it last weekend, it was already been out for like 4 days.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, someone will tell us. So it's a Netflix show based on the true life experience of the writer, actor and director, Richard Gard. He plays himself in the show, but under a different name, Donnie. And it follows him as he gets a stalker, a woman who's a bit older than him called Martha, and follows like him dealing with the case of stalking, also the police, but also like assaulting him and assaulting people he knows, stuff like that, because of the stalking issue. She's a severely mentally ill woman as well, and it kind of touches on that. And then throughout the show, there's also Donnie grappling with his sexuality after undergoing some sexual grooming and sexual abuse at the hands of someone higher up than him in the comedy industry, like a writer in the industry who's like promising him the world, and then is sexually abusive towards him.
Cool.
Not really cool.
Yeah, no. I feel like it was kind of a sleeper hit on Netflix. Like, as you said, it was out for a few days and then people were like finding it quite organically.
Yeah, I wouldn't have really clicked on it, and then people on Twitter were like, this is mad, like everyone needs to get on it. And then I think overnight it was like number one most watched in the UK and US, which was a bit surprising, to be honest, because I feel like British stuff doesn't really not translate, but I'm always surprised when something so British goes like wild over there.
It's interesting as well, because I feel like obviously there is stuff on Netflix that is British, like Sex Education and stuff, but I haven't watched the show yet, but it feels like it's kind of a bit BBC coded. So it's interesting that like a Netflix show that is like BBC ITV coded has gotten big in America as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think like with Sex Education and stuff, they do it, the way they make it is like through this lens where Americans can like still relate to it, like the school format and stuff, whereas this is so like really, really rooted in like London, especially, and Britain in general. But we're not really discussing, well, we are discussing the show, but we're also just going to be talking about the discourse that's erupted since the show has come out.
So one of the initial main ones is that basically it's marketed as a true story, right?
It's the first thing you see on the screen that says this is a true story.
And so for that reason, and also this also ties into Netflix as a platform. So basically people have been looking for the like real life people behind the characters, obviously, apart from Gad, who he's himself. Yeah, yeah. So they've been looking for Martha, who's the stalker. And then also, what's the man called?
The abuser. He's called Damien in the show.
Yeah, yeah. So they've been like scouring through social media, like trying to find clues and stuff that like relate to who's who. There is like someone who's quite high up in the theatre industry or like the comedy industry that has had to come out and say like, oh, it's not me.
Richard Gad has had to come out and be like, stop looking for who it is, and then had to name this guy specifically and be like, it's not him, by the way.
Yeah. And then people have found this person who they think Martha is because they've correlated some of the tweets and stuff.
Yeah, so it's interesting because when I was reading through our research, thank you Seaham for doing it, part of the marketing around Netflix that I didn't see because I kind of came across it organically, it was saying like, these are the real emails. It was saying like, these are the real content. Like, that's kind of like how they were sounding, being like, this is a true story and this is actually like what was said to him. And in the age of the internet, obviously people have pulled like specific phrases that were used in the show, searched that on Twitter with the writer's name. Sorry, this is kind of like a manual on how to fucking do it, but don't. People are doing that and then have found a woman who very closely looks like the character in the show who has tweeted or like said these things across different social media platforms directly to Richard Gad.
Yeah.
So people are just connecting the dots like, oh, it's most likely her.
Mm-hmm. And I think Netflix is a platform that kind of inspires that type of behaviour because Netflix kind of revolutionized the true crime format in terms of documentary. Like, it's basically their bread and butter at this point, but one of the first hits was like Making a Murderer that came out like around the same time as Serial, like kind of quite early in the context of like now and streaming and podcasts and stuff. Like, they were two of the like front runners, and there was another one as well that I can't remember, but I feel like, and they even made a documentary about it, like, remember the cat one?
Yeah Cat.
The people that
like to strangle a cat or something.
Yeah, something like that. And it was about specifically like the Facebook group that like was trying to find that cat killer. So I feel like Netflix itself kind of feeds into that culture as well of people going too far and like looking for real people or like rooting for the real people behind it. But this is probably like in their documentaries and stuff, they've had dramatized sections, but not like a fully, they probably have had a fully dramatized one because obviously it's Netflix and they put out about 200 things a month, but I can't remember like a fully dramatized real life story having this much impact on the platform.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's not something that, and also like neither of us really exist in these two crime worlds. So I'm sure that they do exist within those spheres.
Yeah.
But there's been like, well, I guess there was like Gypsy Rose, but that wasn't on Netflix.
Yeah. I'm talking about Netflix specifically.
But Netflix specifically. Yeah. Cause when we were like going through it, like the like thing that was kept leaping at me is like, who's responsible for there being such a bad safeguarding issue in this? Like, the identity's not being changed enough for these people to still be identified. And you were saying that you feel like it's a bit purposeful.
Yeah, I feel like it's a marketing technique because there's no, obviously having a true story as like a writer or a creator or whatever, you are taught not to do that. Like, you were saying that when you've written stuff before, you have to like remove identifiable features from people. Same for stuff that was in my book. Like, lots of stuff goes through like very heavy legal edits. Like, obviously I can't speak to TV because I haven't done TV, but like in literature, and it seems like it would be the same. But because like Netflix is such a giant in streaming and they know that this type of attention like drums up viewers for their TV shows, I feel like they've definitely encouraged it, like, especially of what you're saying, like, the first sign this is a true story, and that they're, like, a studio that's born from the internet. They know how these things work, and all of their successes are basically through viral marketing, like, as opposed to traditional marketing or anything. So I feel like they were definitely hoping that this would happen, if not directly feeding into it, by making the characters look and sound the same, because it's either that, like, Richard Gad himself has wanted to do that, and even if that's the case, he should have probably been talked out of it, Or is that like Netflix have encouraged it, or it's a bit of both? Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. Like, he's now, Richard is on like the defense trail of everyone kicking off, being like, it's come full circle. Like, people have found him. People are saying you shouldn't be finding them. And then he's had to come out and be like, stop looking. But there's also like this case that people, he's also being like, when he was first doing the interviews for the show, he's like, we made them so like unidentifiable. Like, you would never guess. Like, it's kind of like a bit like, well, you didn't really do anything to change how identifiable they were. So it's like, I don't understand why he even said that in the first place.
Yeah, like, even if you switch the industry or whatever, or like switch like the area, because one of the women who has been thought of to be the woman in the show has like been able to, people have been able to like identify the pub and like therefore go through people that have like geotagged themselves in the pub, like people that know the pub, and it's just like so intense.
Yeah, all this, basically all he's done, like, from what,
it changed the names.
It's changed the names, yeah.
Which is crazy.
Which is really sinister.
And, like, obviously we're talking about a complicated subject because, like, the people that people are kind of sleuthing for are someone who was a stalker and someone who was, like, a rapist and abuser. But I feel like that also, I wrote in my notes, these types of, like, campaigns to find people really reassert the binary of, like, good and bad, which has become more messy as like more has come out about the show, but we'll go into that maybe in the second half. But there's like one article in The Guardian, the dangerous fallout from Baby Reindeer. Should Richard Gadd have been less honest about his abusers? That is basically saying that people were always going to try and join the dots, even Fleabag. Like, Phoebe Waller-Bridge has expressed that she felt like she didn't protect her family. And that's the article that says it seems like an oversight and that it could have been prevented so easily. Yeah, all of that stuff, basically. But then the article was also saying it could have just not disclosed it was a true story. And then basically no one would care.
That's the thing. Like, there was like an article that was responding to this by the author's called Rachel Ulatowski at the Mary Sue. And she's like, everyone deserves the right to tell their true story and clarify it's a true story and stand in their truth. And I thought that was really interesting. Like, why have we come to the point where like people like telling their truth in the public sphere to like an audience of millions is considered the same way as like standing in your truth in like an argument with like a friend that like your therapist has told you, no, you should go back and like stand up for yourself. Like, that is like just a reiteration of therapy speak that's been applied to new contexts that literally just don't, it shouldn't in any way. Like, and there's such like a power imbalance here, because no matter what narrative you say, like all the narratives that I've ever said about anything that's gone on in my life have always been through my lens. Mm. And it's like, as a writer, like, you've got a responsibility to view that. And Richard, and like, and I hate to say this about like this guy, he has been through such a shit time, but like, he's not really taken responsibility that this is the narrative through his eyes. And there could very easily be a Netflix show about a woman who gets obsessed with a man and she's has a really shit life, and like, he just shows her kindness and she gets really obsessive with him. And if they'd shown this story through her eyes and it had been this popular, she'd be a girl boss. People would be on her side. People would be like, she's so me, she's pearl coded. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm, it would be like, mm-hmm. That, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, people are really like not seeing that this isn't objective. Yeah. Telling of the story. And it's really annoyed me in a lot of the press coverage of it, where it's like, well, the show has like tried to do this job of showing Martha sympathetically.
Mm.
But I don't think they did at all, really. I think like they made her seem very like monstrous and scary and dangerous, which she probably was through Richard's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But she's a deeply mentally unwell woman, and they do show that in the show, but they don't show really like a lens of sympathy towards her going through that.
Mm-hmm.
And having like this serious mental illness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we were also saying she kind of like really feeds into stereotypes of like fat women in particular, like irregardless of whether the real Martha was like fat, she's feeding into those stereotypes in the show and the way she's portrayed, like being like lonely, being mentally unwell, like
even being unkempt, like, yeah. It's so like jarring. Like, she's poor as well, like she's only eating ready meals when he goes to looks through a window, like she's living like a pig in shit, like do you know what I mean though? Like, they're just like laying all these things on her, and they're like, we're showing her sympathetically because like, look how horrible her life is. It's like, it's not really showing anything sympathetically, because there's so many people who have so much ire against fat people and think that's just how fat people live.
And also there's a difference between trying to like incite sympathy and like making someone look pathetic rather than showing them sympathetically. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, exactly.
To me, showing someone, a character sympathetically, is by like casting a certain specific type of lens that like helps you empathize with that person and helps you maybe understand the conditions that led to it, not just being like, look how pathetic this person is.
Yeah, and look how obsessed with me she is. But then the only person who really gets like the sympathy edit in this show is Richard Gard. Obviously. And he doesn't always give it to himself. Like, I've got to say, there are standout points where he's like openly admitting, like, I fucked up. I went about this way. I think it's because it was informed by my trauma from my sexual assault. I also think it could be because I've got like these own like internal homophobic issues. And also I'm a victim of being stalked, and like not all the decisions I made were right. And he like very openly, candidly addresses that. He's the only character who gets like a sympathetic edit. And then the woman that he's dating, what's she called? She's called Terry in the show.
Mm.
The trans woman that he starts dating. She gets a very sympathetic edit, I feel, in the show. Her narrative is kind of, he applies to a trans dating website, lies about his identity to get with her, and then halfway through, like, tells her, like, oh, I was lying, by the way. And then she tells her about his stalk, and it's like, we have to stay indoors now. And she has, she falls into, like, quite a depression. She's like, oh, when the stalker attacks her, Martha attacks Terry and calls her a man. And obviously that's fucking awful. And then it shows like Terry processing that. And then it's like immediately going from being told that to having to be locked up inside with you and being like this secret thing about your life makes me have like a negative impact on myself. And then there's kind of like this more full circle moment where he sees her in the street and she's with a new man and she's just fucked it off. She gets this quite a sympathetic edit, but in the another facet of what's come out since is Richard Gard's attitude towards trans women.
Yeah, so I think this is like the other side of the coin of the issue of it being presented as such a true story, is that like, A, people are like trying to get to the characters that are presented as bad people and find the real ones and like punish them. So for example, people are sending the like inverted commas real Martha death threats, and then the real Martha in inverted commas has like made her own statement kind of thing. But then I was looking at the replies to it on Twitter and everyone's just being fucking horrible to her.
Yeah.
And then the second thing that's come is that like quite a few trans women have come forward alleging that basically they were not treated well in real life by the real Richard Gard. So one of them, particularly Reese Lyons, did like a big Twitter thread and Instagram thread that was saying that Richard Gabb was using the casting of the show to basically try and like date trans women and did that to her. So it kind of like really calls into question like how much growth has he actually done, or like how much growth was inserted into the show to, yeah, make the show possible, if that makes sense.
Yeah, she says on one of her dates, well, I think they did one date, and she's like, oh, from reading the script and interacting with you, no, I think you fetishize trans women. I don't think you see us as like actual partners. Valid partners to have. And apparently he just like flipped out and was like, how dare you, like, I'm so introspective, I really understand myself. And that kind of like happens when people, I think what's interesting about the show is like he tells the truth, like, oh, he doesn't say explicitly, but it's very clear that he fetishizes trans women, but is also like internally very like uncomfortable with sexuality, and that's why he's hiding it behind closed doors. But then there's no like, and then this changed, or there's no like, and then this is what I learned from myself, and then I saw that that was bad. It's kind of like just seen as like a subplot to this wider story, rather than like something that, it's just kind of like he's absolving of himself of it by telling the truth of it, the matter, without actually like, from the backlash that we've gotten, that we've read from these women coming forward, is that he hasn't actually changed.
Yeah.
So, like, what's the point of even putting this in a show? Because you're just absolving loads of fucking other people, as well as yourself, from having this kind of attitude towards trans women.
But I think that's the interesting final point in terms of what you were saying. Like, we only see one point of view, and that is his. So, therefore, he's the only one that gets any absolution.
Exactly. And that's kind of like it's very self-gratifying in a way, isn't it?
Yeah. So we're going to go to the quick ad break that we're trying to test out, actually putting in and saying, so you don't just hear us get off, cut off, get off.
Anyway, ad now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So to swerve, because like when I've seen this and I haven't watched the show because yeah, it seems like by day more and more backlash or like bad things comes out about it in general. So it kind of puts me off. And I think that's what you were saying, that like if you had all of this when you started it,
I wouldn't have watched it. I don't. Yeah. If I knew any of this, I would have been like, I don't want to play a part in it.
Well, it's definitely a mess, like, for sure.
It's fucking grim. And it's sad because when I first watched it, I definitely had like an emotional reaction to it. And it really stuck with me for like a day, 2 days. And I was like, it's such like an interesting unpacking of trauma and the way that trauma can make you a bad person or even just a complicated person. Like, I thought that's such an interesting narrative, especially for a man to put out in a fictional TV show, but that he's related to being about himself. Or like I said, like this is a true story, just a fictionalized version. I thought it was really great unpacking of like how victims of trauma aren't necessarily like angels, but then people have kind of seen it in black and white. Like you said, like they've seen him as the good guy. These are the bad guys. We need to get vigilante justice. And I thought it was really interesting because, spoiler warning, at the end, the show ends with Martha.
I think we've gone past that.
Martha being. The show ends with Martha being convicted and she goes to prison again. She's been in prison before for stalking, but I found what really interesting was that she wasn't charged in real life. He's just given himself that happy ending within this fictionalized version of his story.
But I think what's more interesting to me than like, also it calls into question, because what you said about your initial reaction to the show was very much like art. Do you know what I mean? Like, as in like art incites these kind of emotional visceral reactions in you. And I feel like the social media kind of onslaught since, and then considering whether or not that is actually a byproduct of how the show has been marketed, it's very much like commerce, and it brings in like all of these things in terms of like how we're marketed entertainment and like what the entertainment industry is now and like what gets eyes on screens or whatever. And then like feeds back into social media and how people react to it. So in the research, there's a lot about like true crime podcasts and how they specifically kind of invite audiences to become parasocial towards these like characters or people or the crimes that they're talking about, and saying that like, wait, let me get the name of the paper up. So Murderinos, examining the female audience of true crime podcasts with My Favorite Murder by Bella Hughes for Ball State University. So this is obviously about My Favorite Murder. I haven't listened to it, but
My Favorite Murder.
But I feel like it's definitely applicable to this situation of people hunting down like the real life people, and even people coming out in response to like Richard Gadd's bad behavior is also a reaction to this in a way. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a reaction to how we kind of process things through social media rather than like the water cooler conversations. Do you know what I mean?
Whereas
usually it'll be like 10 of you round like having a coffee in the morning in your office, and then you go like, all right, yeah, and go sit back at your desks. Whereas now the conversation like rolls on and on and
on. Yeah, you might read like a newspaper article about it, and then you talk about your mates, you have to see this, then you'd all talk about it after, and then you'd move on. Whereas like there's so much information thrown at you from like behind the scenes, the context of it, this is what has happened after, that will make you have like bad thoughts about how you experienced it.
So in this paper, there's a point in it that says that basically by bringing listeners into the personal accounts of others, it lends to the hyper intimacy of podcasts in particular. But I think that can also extend to like anything, especially when it's tied into a real story. Especially as like, you know, people watching this show like on their laptops, on their phones, on their tablets, like we don't have the same situation anymore of, yeah, you sit down at the TV and there's like a sense of removal, especially as like Richard Gadd like came up through Fringe, like he came up through a very like grassroots way. Like we feel like that's already kind of instates some intimacy to the situation, I feel.
Oh my God, and this is so made for those TikTok series, which is like woman stalks man, 10 part series, watch it, like find out. And then it's like someone's cut an episode into like 10 TikToks.
So
sorry, that's such like a segue.
So that hyper intimacy extends to the speakers as well, wherein listeners feel as though they develop parasocial relationships with the hosts. And that there's another article in Cosmo, Everyone Has Missed the Point of Baby Reindeer, by the way, by Kimberly Bond for Cosmo, saying, we've developed an insatiable appetite to uncover the truth, regardless of the wishes or the pain of those involved. We're no longer just passive viewers. We have to actively play as armchair detectives and unpick the reality of a story from the embellishments made with artistic license. And I think this also like ties into a few things that have happened on TikTok, and that like, I feel like it's just been a really big week for stuff like this. That makes it sound really like light, but obviously it's not. But there's been like a couple of high profile deaths on TikTok as well. Like one of them being Marissa Roth, who was a Blind Items like gossip account. And straight away people were kind of going to conspiracy theories, because like her last video was about JoJo Siwa, so people were like being like, JoJo Siwa did this, obviously ridiculous. But then like, if anything bad happens, you go into the comment section and people are literally like playing out their delusions and their derangement. Like, I know this sounds terrible, but it's true.
It's the Eva Evans, the New York content creator, also passed away this week. And then Seahan pulled out some screenshots from like the comments, and people were saying, this is, people aren't talking about betrayal trauma is something absolutely not talked about enough. If I died and someone used that to bring up some theory, like speculating on my death, why my death happened, that's so dark. And the thing about social media as well is like, when we've experience this in real time, like you won't avoid it, like you it's so hard to remove yourself from those conversations and not like take part, not take, like you won't take passively part in it, but you'll just like see it and like it'll get under your skin, and it's endless.
Well, algorithms are definitely playing into this as well. So I was shown the Eva video where she goes to a psychic, which I think has been pushed to a lot of people after her passing, which is like really, really dark. And then there's comments like, guys, please stay away from psychics. They receive information from the demonic. Going to a psychic opens a door into your life for demons to have full range on you. And then like all of these other people are commenting like, oh my God, just been shown this. Or like, turns out it was a lie and she's not psychic. Turns out this, turns out that. Like, really, they're acting like these people are like characters in a show. But the algorithm plays to that. So, for example, obviously when Eden died, there were so many social media posts about it. But then on my For You tab on Twitter, it was every single one was relating to death. Or like, I was being getting thrown tweets about Eden from people that I don't follow, people that I don't know. Like, you're constantly being like regurgitated this information, because the algorithm knows that like, if you don't have a direct relationship with that person, which obviously makes it really triggering and fucking shit, that there's like a nosiness where people go, well, I want to know everything about that. I want to watch like 10 hours of this girl content. I want to know everything about her life. Like, people have been trying to go for Eva's ex-boyfriend because they broke up like shortly before her passing, and literally trying to like dox him.
That's the thing, like, what used to be purely speculative has now been for, like, and stuff that you'd say, like, behind closed doors, like, stuff that you'd, like, say to your mate, be like, oh my God, I wonder what happened, has now been, like, bolstered by the anonymous nature of the internet to just say whatever the fuck you want with no consequences, which is starting to eke out into real life where there are consequences, and it affects real people, and it affects the families of people, like, victims like this, and it affects Martha, for instance. The anonymous nature of the internet has led us all to like just having such like low boundaries about like our internal thoughts that should, or like our like private conversations have just become so public, and they've been like validated by the internet because people are like joining in because they're like, oh, I also thought this and I felt bad for it. And then it spirals into this thing. And that's kind of like what true crime is. It's validating these people with like a special interest in murder or like crime.
Well, there's literally also a crossover in terms of before, this would be like community building or bonding in terms of in your small friendship group. But now people are seeking validation in these comments sections, like who can have the best theory or who can do this or who can do that. Or they're finding other people to have like this conversation with that maybe they don't. So it's like also like bridging some weird kind of like loneliness gap, and people seeking similar behavior from other people where they not might not be able to have those conversations in real life. And all of these things, like, it gets really, really complicated. But yeah.
I think there's a reason why it's uncomfortable to have those conversations in real life, because it's like, if you said that in a way, in a place that that can be found upon by someone that it truly affects, it's fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, that's, there's no way around it. Like, that's fucked up. And the way that the internet has, like, just really disregarded how they just don't see that people who it is, are affected by this, even by, like, a fucking, like, tenuous link, like, something like that might have happened to someone in their family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, there's just no regard for, like, making sure people don't come across things that are gonna emotionally harm them. And I think I've become so much more aware of that in the past year or so.
Well, I feel like there's a twofold kind of responsibility here. Like, there's one responsibility on the actual tech side of things for, like, the people that create algorithms, not to, like, okay, it's harmful for you to be shown, like, a Stanley Cup 20 times in an hour, but it's not, like, it's, like, not actually psychologically damaging. Do you know what I mean? But it's, like, literally stripping away, like, our ability to communicate empathy and sympathy, turning people's lives into content, which then goes back to the Baby Reindeer show, because there's a quote of him saying, oh, I thought this would be a good story while it was happening to me.
Yeah.
And it's making us process our lives in all of this way, because Tavi said something similar in the Taylor Swift scene she does, where she's like, in one of the fake emails, Taylor's saying to her, like, oh, the way you told that story was weird, because it was like you were already considering it in the context of, like, a story with a bird's eye view. And we're all getting trained to think of our lives in this way and dehumanize each other. But we, as users of these platforms, need to be the ones to stop that, not the platforms themselves, because they're always going to act within the best interest of engagement.
Yeah, they're always going to be following, like, what gets them the most engagement. And most of the time, the thing that gets them the most engagement is rageful discourse where people are disagreeing with each other. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no comment section longer than people having an argument.
As we know.
As we know.
So I think we're running over, so we've got to leave it there.
Yeah.
Any burning final thoughts?
Just wish everyone would fuck up. Like, fine. Yeah, that's it.
Should I watch Baby Reindeer?
No.
I feel like people are going to be like, you didn't even watch it, but whatever.
Well, you'll find it on fucking TikTok Live.
Yeah, I'll find it in, like, 200 parts.
I think just, like, the culture of speculation needing to now be fulfilled with actual, like, here's the list of proof that this person is Martha, being touted by fucking reputable,
which the Shade Room is just done. not reputable
but, like, also reputable media spaces. It's just so disheartening and upsetting.
And with that, thank you, Gina.
Thank you, Ione.
Thank you to Siham for researching and Olivia for editing.
Thank you, everyone, for listening.
We will see you next week.
Yeah, we will see you next week for hopefully a less.
We're doing AI Girlfriends next week. It's going to be as much.
Yeah, tune in for AI Girlfriends. We'll be going off.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hold up. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.